When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Wow, Matt, fellow adventurers. We are back with Sir Croakington. Having got as deep as we can go in Rackler's Mad for now, we decided to take a break from that saga, which does continue with the adventure called Urgo's Trail, which is in High Metal. But we're going to put that off for a bit. Because once I start doing that, that leads to things, which leads to other things, which leads to other things, and it goes on for quite a while. And I want to do some other stuff while I still remember them. Anyhow, there's something to do. To do is go to Wummit Farm. This is where you can fight the giant pumpkin beast. It's not here right now, but it'll be back. It'll be back. But more important right now is to get ourselves a pumpkin. Attempt to acquire one of Wormwit's pumpkins, and I will. Taking only a few steps in the direction of the pumpkin field, when a loud voice wings out from your left. You're just gonna help yourself, are you? You turn and see a large, broad-shouldered man approaching you. The man's white hair, which is quite unkempt, gives away his advanced age, though judging by the thickness of the arms and the girth of his chest, he still possesses much of the strength he enjoyed in his younger days. He knows at once that the elderly but imposing figure is that of Farmer Wormwit. The village of Hawklaw is full of colourful tales involving him. You have anything to say for yourself? Or shall I run you off this parcel? He grumbles, rolling back his sleeves, as if preparing to have a go at you. Oh, no! I don't give my pumpkins away, lass. I'll not stand for the likes of... Suddenly, the man's eyes open wide and his face grows red. He relaxes his stance and clears his throat. My severe apologies, he says, having apparently recognised you. You don't deserve words like those that just smacked you in the ear. Please, pay them no mind. Workers of my farm, Sir Croakington. I've been overrun these last few days, as Farmer Wormwit, with everyone trekking up here to snatch a pumpkin. I didn't realise it was you, Sir Croakington, and I certainly won't ever be short with you. Not after all you've done for us folk around these parts, and that's a lot of stuff. Even when this part was put out many, many years ago, as this section number is only 10,432. So this is some old stuff. I hope you can forgive an old, ornery man. You dismiss his apology as unnecessary, and with a smile and a wave of your hand, his face brightens as he slaps you on the shoulder with his broad hand. Well, then, no harm done, he smiles. Let me show you to the prize of this old farm. The grandest pumpkin patch to ever grace his Majesty's kingdom. But how about a drop of jitters first? He draws out a small leather flask and takes a large swallow from it. He then hands the flask to you. Well, what is jitters, anyway? Jitters, that's the term for woot wine. Not really a wine at all. Woot wine is actually a strong, slightly sweet-tasting spirit made from the woot of the Ygorek vine. Woot wine, sometimes called the jitters, is a drink in demand in taverns and alehouses throughout the realms. Apart from its intoxicating properties, the spirit provides a remarkable warming effect, and has long been a cold weather staple, often consumed at the conclusion of a meal. Yeah, I like that they just... Yeah, he's made up an entirely different beverage that's apparently your characters eat, and it makes sense. I mean, making wine from roots, I mean, alcohol, I guess. I mean, we make alcohol from nearly everything else. I mean, if it exists, someone has probably thought, yeah, but can I make booze out of it? Sometimes it's worked. Yeah. He draws out a small leather flask and takes a large swallow from it. He then hands the flask to you. Accept a drink from the flask or politely refuses. Well, I guess I'll accept a drink from the flask. There you are now, he lasps. He laughs as you take a draught of the strong spirit from the flask and hand it back to him. There's nothing quite like the swallow of the jitters in pumpkin season. Farmer Wormit takes another drink from his flask and then tucks it into his belt. Well, enough standing around jobbing the jitters, he laughs. We gotta get you a pumpkin! With that, he starts off towards the pumpkin field and motions for you to follow along. And Sir Croakington just hops from pumpkin to pumpkin, because if you're small, you might as well. And Sir Croakington is small. Is right now, anyway. Sometimes she's not small, but most of the time, she's very small. Here it is, says Farmer Wormick, as he leads you up to the edge of the pumpkin field. The largest and finest patch in all the kingdom. Oh, I've been mistaken for quite some time. Surely it's a thing of beauty, don't you think, Sir Croakington? Farmer Wormick tells you to pick any pumpkin you want from the patch. And as you set off into the field, wonder what actual use you might have for a pumpkin. Oh, I think we're just about to find out. He lights a pipe and leans up against the fence. Take all the time you like, he calls after you. There's some real beauties in that patch. Best patch in the last 10 years. So picking a number 1 to 100. There is no modifiers at all. And I don't actually think this actually affects anything. So anyway, pick now. 74. After wandering through the endless rows of pumpkins for nearly a quarter of an hour, all the while under the watchful eye of the piping Farmer Wormwit, you select a large, almost perfectly round specimen out of the endless sea of orange at your feet. It's a grinning jackalope. Wait, when did it start grinning? This is the large pumpkin you took from Farmer Wormwit's famed pumpkin patch. It's bigger than Sir Croakington. Although, admittedly, a lot of things are bigger than Sir Croakington. At some point, when you weren't looking, it transformed itself into a grinning jack-o'-lantern. And its grin is anything but jolly. Okay, who did that? Who did that? Who carved my pumpkin? You can't carve a pumpkin without asking for permission first. It's rude. And you can't, you get all the, you ruin all the delicious, pumpkin innards. Which presumably some people eat. I mean, not all of them are carved. Some of them are made into pies. And other things. I mean, someone must do something with all these pumpkins. Someone's got to eat these pumpkins. Right? Otherwise, that's what they're for. Well, it's what they were for, but it's kind of been forgotten. They've just been turned into a craft project. And I don't know what percentage of pumpkins that are grown are turning into jack-o'-lanterns, but I don't think I'd be that surprised to say most of them. Fine, fine choice, exclaims Farmer Wormwit. Oh, wait. Some are made into jack-o'-lanterns, and some of the pumpkins who are grown as big as possible, reaching... Wait, I'm going to look things up now. Yeah, apparently someone's grown a pumpkin up to 2,700 pounds. And that was 2001. I wouldn't be that surprised if someone's either passed that amount, or right now a pumpkin is growing that will pass that amount. And you know what? If you're that pumpkin, I'm cheering you on. You go get bigger, but you know, still stay in the hammer object. Don't turn, please, please, please don't turn into some sort of monster that tries to eat people. Pretty please. Don't turn into a monster that tries to eat people. I know you want to, but pretty please don't. I know you want to eat people, you know, revenge, but please don't. Please don't eat people. You're just so big. You'd be terrifying. People have grown ridiculously huge pumpkins. I don't know what it is about pumpkins that lets them grow so big. Because, I mean, they're as big as you can get a fruit. I mean, people have been trying for ridiculously big with every other fruit. But they're just not getting anywhere near as big as the pumpkins. Admittedly, by default, pumpkins are pretty darn big. I mean, we're talking about a foot across, nearly. That's just your average common old garden pumpkins that you can just find in any old supermarket for carving and perhaps making into a pie, but probably for carving. For carving and then just leaving there until it rots, and it's very sad. Even if it's smiling, it's still sad. Anyway, we're back to Farmer Wormwit. A fine, fine choice, exclaims Farmer Wormwit, walking up from the behind and slapping you on the back. Well, I guess gently tapping me on the back. Just a gentle tap, because Sir Crokington is very small. With nearly enough force to drive the wind from your lungs. Okay, maybe not that gentle. You hold on to that now. They say a pumpkin's good luck in the season of wither. Much as you expected, escaping from Wormwit Farm proves to be no easy task. Farmer Wormwit, meaning no harm, engages you in a long, meandering conversation that lasts most of the afternoon, as he asks you in detail about nearly every one of your recent adventures. Alright, okay, so he knows... He probably knows all about the very, very sludgy, messy thing we did in the previous episode. I probably had to file off some of the more exact details for his own safety. I probably didn't say it was part of Wackler's Man. I probably put it into some random cave somewhere. Wherever he spreads it around, he's not going to be putting himself at any risk. Because I think Wackler's Mad, there are various entities that are in pursuit of the secrets of Wackler's Mad. And quite a few of them are perfectly willing to murder. Yes, gotta be careful with that. With that sort of stuff. Yeah, and at long last, with your bright orange prize in hand, well, it's not in hand, it's in my mysterious dimensionally transcendental inventory. You know, all the best heroes have. The US farm boom went well with the rest of his pumpkins, and cheerfully and thankfully bid him farewell before setting out on your way back to Hawklaw. Alright, let's go back to Hawklaw. I happen to know, if you wander around a bit, something will happen. Or at least it should. Alright, let's go Southern Tysa. No, not the Longspur Downs. No, there's no point going there if you've already got your glittering ice shield. Alright, the Winterwire Lake. Alright, Southern Tysa, Eastern Tysa. Maybe I have to save first. Copperhill Lodge. Into the lodge. You know. Yeah, the only adventure left is the dodge is Whispers, which is somewhat ethically dubious. Oh, I'm saving. Maybe you need to save for it to realise something. Alright, Central Tysha, let's go to Talanus. Maybe not there. Alright, Southern Tysha. Copper Wood. Visit the Copper Wood. No. I know something happens here. Eastern. Alright, maybe it only makes sense if I go to Hawklaw first. No. I mean, I've got my pumpkin. Something should be happening. Western. Trithic. Ah! Okay, now this is new. I knew something new would turn up. You suddenly spot something high in the sky. Straining your eyes, you attempt to make out the small, dark shape that circles far above. You watch the tiny grey speck as it holds its pattern for quite some time, till at last it turns to the east and soars off out of sight, swiftly becoming lost in a drifting sea of high clouds. Okay, what's east? Central Tysa. While travelling through Central Tysa, you suddenly spot something high in the sky. Straining your eyes, you attempt to make out the small, dark shape that circles far above. You watch the tiny grey speck as it holds its pattern for quite some time, until it at last turns to the south and soars off out of sight, swiftly becoming lost in a drifting sea of high clouds. What if I just go east instead, though? Apparently nothing happens. Northeast? No. North? No. Okay, south of Central Tysa is Southern Tysa. While travelling through Southern Tysa, you suddenly spot something high in the sky. Straining your eyes, you attempt to make out the small, dark shape that circles far above. You watch the tiny grey speck as it holds its pattern for quite some time, till at last it turns to the east and soars off out of sight, swiftly becoming lost in a drifting sea of high clouds. Okay, in the southeast. While travelling through Southeast Tysa, you suddenly spot something high in the sky. Straining your eyes, you attempt to make out the small, dark shape that circles far above. You watch the tiny grey speck as it holds its pattern for quite some time, until at last it begins to loom larger against the pale blue sky. Whatever it is, it's now rapidly descending. With a mix of fascination and trepidation, you watch as the grey shape continues to grow as it loses altitudes. The moment you realise just what it is that holds your gaze, you let out a startled gasp. Dropping through the sky directly above your head is a massive, broad-winged dragon! Yay, dragons! Everybody loves dragons! You know, apart from perhaps the people whose stuff keeps getting burninated by dragons. But even they're like, okay, maybe this particular dragon's a dick. But in principle, dragons, woo! That's a general rule. Dragons, woo! Honestly, we need another dragon to fight this dragon! Woo! Alright. The dragon continues its rapid descent until it is only 100 feet above your head. Then, with a startling airborne agility, the massive creature gracefully pulls out of its dive and turns broadside to the ground. Your heart nearly skips a beat, but not quite. I've got good at that. I've got good at having my heart not skip beats anymore. It took a bit of practice, but I've finally managed to get my heart to not skip any more beats. As at the precise moment the beast's true horrifying nature is revealed, the enormous golden horned head of the mighty grey-scaled dragon is the only portion of the beast that yet bears flesh. The rest of the dragon's body is nothing but bone. As the skeletal dragon soars off, you catch sight of a tall, black-caped, silver-haired rider seated upon its ridged spine. Oh god, that guy is so freaking cool! He's so cool! Oh, she's so cool! Can't really tell the gender from this distance. Or even if she bothers with that sort of stuff. Because you have a dragon, you can be whatever gender you want. Because you've got a dragon. People just go along with you when you're saying, oh, wait, pronouns? Oh, yeah, you can use whatever pronouns you want because there's a dragon. Yes, so if anyone messes with you about that, have a dragon. They won't mess with you again. Although, admittedly, it's very hard to get a dragon. Well, there's Komodo dragons, but yeah, don't get them. They have their own things to deal with. And plus, you won't know how to look after them. And they're carnivorous, so carnivorous, and they don't give a shit. So you probably get yourself eaten eventually. Yeah, so probably don't actually. Yeah, don't. You know, don't get a dragon unless you like, you know, a professional dragon eater. Otherwise, that'll just end up. That's probably just end terribly. But of course, she's a professional dragon eater, and apparently also a necromancer, or something like that. And anyway, really, really cool. Whoever he, she, it, them, whatever. Whatever pronouns she wants. She can have all the pronouns. She can all the pronouns she wants. Seated upon its ridged spine, both the dragon and its rider disappear from view over a series of small hills to the east. Though you can't be certain, you believe they may have landed somewhere over in that direction. Okay, hills. Where are some hills? Well, there's Crow Hill. Maybe they're there. Also, that's a new place, so definitely worth checking out. Crow Hill. Visit Crow Hill. The climb to the top of Crow Hill proves lengthier, broader, and more treacherous than you thought it would. Loose ground, jagged rocks, and steep terrain make for an arduous and altogether dangerous ascent. At long last, however, you scramble over a broad, flat face of stone and find yourself standing at the summit. From up here, you can see far and wide across the vast bleakness of the moor that stretches out to the horizon in all directions. To the north and east, you can just make out the silhouette of the city of Trindmoor, which stands in stark contrast to the dull grey landscape that surrounds it. A large hollow at the base of the hill's jagged peak forms a wide alcove that provides not only shelter, but a place to remain out of sight from nearly every direction. You step around the edge of the alcove and peer into it. You're immediately taken aback by the surprising and unsettling sight that your eyes behold within. Standing at the back of the alcove, its broad, fleshless wings now folded against its ragged ridged spine, is a skeletal dragon you spotted more than once in the skies above Tysa. The dragon's head still bears flesh and scale, and from its temples protrude two long golden horns. The terrifying creature grumbles and swings its head in your direction. "Valduikos," speaks a tall man, who steps around the dragon and stands with his arms folded as he fixes his tall, cold gaze upon you. "I'm sorry, I cannot do a voice cool enough for this guy, so you're just going to have to, just whenever I say anything is his voice, imagine it as something much cooler, okay? Imagine it cooler." A black cape is draped across his back, over which spills long, straight silver hair. You immediately recognise him as the rider you saw perched atop the dragon's back when the great beast was in flight. "I sense no evil purpose about you," he says. Who might I ask are you? And what purpose does the top of this hill serve for you?" The dragon snorts angrily, and this time the silver-haired man makes no comment about it. You decide that the best course of action would be to introduce yourself. Yeah, we definitely want to be friends with this really cool person. You cautiously introduce yourself to the black-caped man. He bows in return and tells you that his name is Mulmir, and that he and his companion, the great dragon Ikaros, have travelled here from afar seeking two murderers they believe are hiding out in the nearby cave. Your curiosity piqued, you ask Mulmir to tell you more about his search for the murderers, and a faint smile crosses his lips as he replies. "A heart for adventure, have you?" he says, his harsh gaze softening somewhat. "It would perhaps suit me to have a being like yourself lend a hand in this matter. Though I caution you, there is great peril involved." You tell Mulmir that you wish to know more about the matter, and he again smiles. And so, you shall, he says. "Through, know though, Sir Crokington, that they are brothers. They can hardly be called men, for they are of the blood of wolves." The massive skeletal dragon, Ikaros, as Mulmir identifies, grumbles and thrusts his head past the companion's shoulder as he leers at you. Then, in a tongue that is utterly foreign to you, he snarls something that makes Mulmir frown. "No, you may not eat her!" scowls Mulmir. "Sir Crokington may be the only hope we have of running down and bringing the brothers to justice. Remain silent if he can think of nothing but your stomach. And the thing is, it's very, very hard to fill your stomach when it doesn't exist anymore." Mulmir apologised for Ikaros's remarks. "For the only flesh that remains on him is that of his head," he says. "He is forever ravenous. When he was among the living dragons, he was indeed a terror. A swallower of towns and a wazer of walls. I was with the man who slew him, and it was I who raised him from the dead. His allegiance is to me, and my very word is his command. You need not fear him. Unless, of course, you are given a reason to." You learn that the two brothers he seeks, Siriskur and Mirimkur, are wanted for countless murders they've committed in the kingdom of Feridon, which borders Tysor on the west. Now, just because there's a link to what Feridon is, let's just click that. Feridon, the old kingdom. Feridon is the oldest of the North Broadland nations, once a mighty military power. Its strength of arms has waned of late, for the kingdom still boasts the strongest naval force in all of Northern Swift. Queen Laranon Chevrin has ruled Feridon for nearly 20 years and is loved and served loyally by her subjects. She is a shrewd tactician and oversees all aspects of Feridon's military, prior to her reign, this was unheard of among the monarchs of Vladon. Despite her popularity among her subjects, the queen has survived several assassination attempts throughout her reign. Vladon enjoys good relations with both Narador and Tysa, where the same cannot be said for the nation of Hadrion to itself. Of all the nations in northern Swift, Vladon and Hadrion have waged war against one another more times than any other. There's not been a large scale on armed conflict between the two nations in over 50 years, but tensions still run high, and both sides remain ever vigilant. The capital of Vladon is Wachnar. I'm going to click that. Wachnar is the capital city of Vladon. This densely populated city is surrounded on the north, south and east on the Hartor Mountains. Well, that's a very defensible place. Good place to put a capital city if, say, you keep going to war with your neighbour to the south. Yeah, probably would want a nice defensible capital city. Even if admittedly that probably does somewhat make trade links a little bit harder. Although I think enough roads could probably make up for that. The vale in which it's located is amongst the most fertile farmland in all the North Broadlands. Alright, that probably makes up for that. Queen Laridon Chevwin rules Vladon from a towering citadel that rises above the west of Wachnar. Okay, let's find out about this queen. Queen Laridon Chevwin has ruled Vladon since the death of her father, King Temwin, nearly 20 years ago. She's considered by many to be a good ruler, though there have been several attempts on her life made during her 15-year reign. Many believe the assassination plots are the work of Galarian Forge, a secretive and violent separatist movement originally from the port city of Galeron. The Queen has never married, and the failed assassinations have made her extremely wary of the intentions of others, even those close to her. She is a shrewd technician and oversees all aspects of Thalanides' military. Prior to her reign, this was unheard of among the monarchs of Vladon. Okay, that's enough time in the lore book entries.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You learn the two brothers he seeks, Siriskur and Mirimkur, are wanted for countless murders they committed in the kingdom of Vladon, which borders Tysa in the west. These are men who become wolves at will, he says, his words sending a chill through you. Yet they are not wolfkin. If only they were. Few are those who would willingly stalk this pair. But mine is a mission of the highest order. It was given to me by the Queen herself. She wishes the heads of these wretched creatures to return to her, so she might be proven to all that they no longer prowl in the night, Mullimer tells you that he and Icarus have tracked the brothers for nearly a year, and the trail has ultimately led them here, to the desolate moor that surrounds the city of Twinned Mortars in southeast Tysa. You learn that the cave he believes they are hiding in is only a short trek from the very hill upon which the three of you now stand. "We have them cornered in Eastern Phlegon," he says, "but a dozen of Her Majesty's knights now lie in the grave to show for it. They fled like hunted beasts over the mountains and into this kingdom. Phlegon and I, Icarus and I, have never once lost their trail, though it wound through the worst of the wilds. Our task will only be done when at my feet their two heads like, whoa, he's chased them across two kingdoms. Well, we're not sure how far east in Eastern Phlegon he is, but he's definitely all the way. It's a whole kingdom's, at least one kingdom's size. This is a trail, possibly more. We're not sure how east they were in Eastern Phlegon and how southeast we are right now, but the length of an entire kingdom, that'd be hundreds of miles. Definitely. Maybe even 1,000. They fled like hunted beasts over the mountains and into this kingdom. Alright, I've already said that. Mirrenor turns and glances at the great undead dragon, and then turns back to you. "I am a sorcerer of some considerable power," he says, leaning back against the fleshless foreleg of Icarus, "but I'm not an adventurous seeker, nor does I perceive you to be, Sir Croakington. If you were to help me, I could quite justly reward you. The silver-haired mage, whose age you place at no more than 40 years, whoa, only 40? Brings forth a cloth pouch and empties its content into your hand. Your eyes are immediately drawn to the small pile of adventurer tokens heaped in his palm. Ooh, adventurer tokens, they're the best thing. Well, other than direct stat ups, that is. And of course, excellent story, but that's a given considering this is Swift. "There are 16 of these trinkets in my hand," he says. "All of them are yours in exchange for the heads of Cirrus Mur and Muinkur. What do you have to say to that? Will you tell Muinkur you would gladly accept the task of bringing justice to the pair of the wolf? Murderous wolf men," he nods. Icarus snarls something to his master, and Muinkur translates it for you. "The great Icarus wishes you to know that he's sorry for having asked to eat you," he says, as if it pains him to deliver the dragon's message. "I assure you, Sir Croakington, that his apology is genuine. He has little control over the hunger that plagues him. It is to be his eternal affliction, I suppose." Ooh, well, that's a bit mean. I mean, yes, this dragon was a terrible, terrible thing when it was alive, but still, I mean, keeping them out of dragon heaven, or wherever it is that dragons go, I presume it's a really cool place. This was one thing, but eternal hunger? Ah, that sucks. I hope we can get something to deal with that eventually. Hopefully. Or, you know, die. Die for a wheel. That'll work too. Mullimer tells you that the cave in which he believes the two fugitive brothers are hiding is less than a mile to the east, the edge of a tangled bog. Explains how to get to it, having viewed it from the air only a short while ago, and you take note of the specific landmarks he mentions. be best if you were to go at once, while daylight remains, he cautions you. When the sun sets, darkness becomes the cover beneath their which their wicked deeds are enacted. They are vicious and cunning predators, Sir Croakington. Letting your guard down for even a moment is to invite atrocity and death. You learn that the brothers, Ceres Kerr and Moomin Kerr, are most commonly encountered in human form. Only when they are threatened and feel the need to defend themselves, or when they are on the hunt, do they transform into the nightmarish wolf creatures of murderous infamy. Mulamir wishes you luck and tells you to return here at once as soon as you have something to report. When I next lay my eyes upon you, I pray that you will be depositing their heads at my feet, he says coldly. Well, what is this now? Says Mulamir suddenly, his eyes fixed on the grinning jack-o'-lantern tucked in amongst your possessions. He moves up and closely studies the evil-looking card bank. Cupkin. I think I might be able to put this to use for you. Yes, this should work quite well. You ask Mulamir what he means, and he tells you he has already worked his magic on the pumpkin. I am able to store certain forms of my magic in organic vessels, he tells you. The pumpkin shell you're holding is well suited to the task. Wow, what if I... If only I had two pumpkins! I've imbued it with one of my more potent magical attacks, which is set to assail Moomin Kerr. He's the more powerful of the wicked pair. More puzzled than ever with regard to Mulamir and the strange magic he must wield, you thank him, hoping the magic will work as he says it does, and make certain the pumpkin is packed safely in amongst your belongings. You stand at the top of the jagged, rocky peak known as Quail Hill. To the north and west, you can make out the silhouette of the city of Twindmore, which stands in stark contrast to the vast and bleak moorland that surrounds it. Not far away, in the shelter of a broad alcove of rock that makes up the hill's summit, stands the silver-haired mage Mulamir. Next to him, his bright eyes following your every move, lies his massive companion, the mighty undead dragon, Icaros. Whoa, so, yep. Okay, let's move on and get these things, these wolf men to justice. To the bog cave. Visit the bog cave. Following the directions given to you by Mulamir, specifically using the various landmarks he mentioned, you're able to quickly navigate your way across the moor to the cave at the edge of the bog. From a safe distance, you study the mouth of the cave, seeking any sign that the two fugitive brothers are holed up inside. After several minutes, with the sun beginning to drop from its lofty perch in the bright blue sky, and having no desire to be caught out here after dark, you decide to make your way into their likely lair. With your every sense alert for the first sign of danger, you approach the cave mouth. Then, taking one last look around and holding your reliable light, you step boldly into the cave's dark interior. The cave is far more treacherous than you could have imagined. Small, winding passages split and branch at random, opening into large domed chambers and broad corridors that descend swiftly and steeply into the earth. Mineral deposits glint and flare in the face of your invading light, and the sound of dripping water echoes in every direction, making it difficult to keep your bearings. You struggle onward through the cave, eager to discover if indeed the two wolf brothers are still hiding in its perilous depths, or if they have abandoned this dangerous lair. I think if they did abandon it, Mulamir would have seen. So presumably they're still in here. Unless there's a second exit. In which case they could have got out ages ago and who knows what they're doing. Maybe they moved on to the next kingdom and are already in Wolobhir or something. The kingdom to the east with the knightly orders. Where Anyhow. All right. The one who gave me the crimson tablars. Wundils. Where Wundils from? Well, a long time ago, but still. Anyway, continue to search the cave. Determined to complete your mission, you continue to search the cave, picking a number. Bonus of 50. 20 from woodmanship, 10 from luck, 10 from mind, 10 from agility. Pick now! 133. Suddenly. That's 83 plus 50. You come upon signs of recent activity in this part of the cave. The decomposing remains of several small animals litter the floor, and you can clearly make out what appears to be the imprint of a boot in the patch of muck. A closer examination of the footprint reveals something that makes your blood run cold. While the sides and back of the boot are indeed that of a boot, the toe of the boot is clearly missing. And in its place, extending from the tip, are the impressions of five large clawed toes. Confident you are on the track of the fugitive brothers, you quickly resume your trek through the cave. Yep. The evidence you've discovered seems to suggest the two fugitives you seek are likely to still be hiding somewhere in the cave. Continue to search the cave. Determined to complete your mission, you continue to search the cave. Same check again. 107. That's the suddenly. Alright, and another boot print. Alright, keep searching. Same check. Suddenly, oh, 150. That's as well as it could have gone. And it's another of those boot prints. Keep going. The evidence you discovered thus far leads you to believe you will soon find the two fugitive brothers in this very cave. Continue to search the cave. Here's a check. We passed it with the suddenly. There actually is no passing. The sound of movement in the darkness ahead instantly freezes you in your tracks. You instinctively assume a defensive stance as the source of the unsettling noise emerges into the pool of light cast out before you. It's slime-coated, black and red worm, its hideous torso larger than your own, or even, you know, a regular person, and its gaping circular maw filled with razor-sharp teeth. Slippers in and out of the gloom and attacks. It's a carnage worm. The carnage worm savagely assails you. The savage bite of your enemy tears into and probably removes some of your flesh for 18 damage. Now just keep bashing it. Bashy, bashy, bash. It is slain. 6 XP. You spend a few moments when recovering from the brutal encounter for once again setting off through the cave. Alright, continue to search. The check, 84. We have a suddenly. There's another boot print. Keep searching. 56. A broad sound of movement in the darkness ahead instantly freezes you in your tracks. You instinctively assume a defensive stance as the source of the unsettling noise emerges into the pool of light cast out before you. A broad puddle of black slime surges into view out of the gloom ahead and draws itself up to resemble a tall wave as it begins its merciless assault upon you. It's a massive black slime. Let us begin combat. The black slime surges forward and attacks, and I also surge forward and attack even more. The opponent's attack is encased your head in slime. No, not my head. I need that to put food in. And also, when you're toad, it's kind of hard to tell where the head ends. And so it gets greedy and it gets confused and starts encasing some of my body as well. It is slain. 6 XP. You spend a few moments recovering from the brutal encounter, once again setting off through the cave. Alright, keep searching. Same check again. 98. It's the boot print again. You're almost certain you are now closing in on the two fugitive brothers. Continue to search the cave. 84. Suddenly, another thing has turned up. A small, four-legged, grey and black insect with wildly waving antennas and long exposed fangs, scuttles out of the gloom and attacks. Well, if it has four legs, it's not an insect. But, well, I guess Sir Croakington isn't an entomologist, so I'll forgive that. I guess it's got most... It's insectish. Insectish. Begin combat. Fanged cave crawler. The cave crawler whistles loudly as it strikes you and is slain. 2 XP. Alright, keep going. Same trick again. 128. Suddenly, boot print. You're almost certain you're now closing on the two fugitive brothers. 146. Boot print. Your pulse quickens with every step you take. As you are now more certain than ever, you are swiftly closing in on the two fugitives. You pray you are not walking into an ambush. I'm guessing that the footprints are getting less and less, I guess, eroded. Yeah, because I'm guessing with all the water and gunk flowing around here, the footprints would probably pretty quickly fade away. Alright, continue. Can you search the cave? 58. It's another carnage worm. Like the first one, it savagely assails you. And I just keep whacking it, and it is slain. 6 XP. Pray you are not walking into an ambush. Well, that wouldn't matter either way. I'll bash them no matter what. Check. 105, success, another boot print. Yeah, and same message again, 71. It's a kindest one, just going to quick combat that. 6 XP, keep going. 113, boot print. I think we're getting close to the end. 108, boot print. You pray you're not walking into an ambush. Same message again. Four bright yellow eyes flash out of the deep gloom at the edge of your light's radius. You instinctively freeze, drawing yourself into a defensive stance. You stand with every muscle tensed, waiting for whoever or whatever the eyes belong to step into view. The four eyes suddenly vanish, and into the light steps a pair of haggard-looking men. The faces are caked with grime, and the long, mild, wild manes of hair are knotted and matted down with dried blood. Tattered rags cover their emancipated flames, and their eyes, sunken and narrowed, emit a lurid yellow glow. The larger of the two men addresses you in a ragged, wavering voice. "Get out of here!" he says, his eyes widening as he speaks. "It is a struggle, even now, not to leave it, to leap upon you and swallow you whole. You know nothing of the plague that we bear. You're in danger every moment you linger here." You gaze at the feet of each man and note that their bare toes extend from the torn ends of their boots. There is no doubt that you are in the presence of Suis Mir and Muin Kerr, the two fugitives that Miramur has tasked you with bringing to justice. Realizing to leave would mean the failure of the mission, you quickly strike the option. Alright, so I've got some options. Can use restoration. Converse further with the two men, although I think, as I said, they'll probably just attack me. I could attack them at once. They'll probably give me advantage. And hopefully Miramur's little device will do something. Will blow up one of them. Or at least severely wound it. Or I could demand that they surrender to you. I think the second and fourth will just pretty much just lead to a fight in quick order, but I'll check the wiki. Yeah, pretty much I heal them or I fight them. Now, admittedly, I pretty much never do the fighting option because, well, it's just less heroic. So I'm gonna do restoration. If it fails, I'll just fight them, and I'll just accept that's the way it's gonna go. Restoration has to be level 70 plus. So this is a very, this is a quite difficult thing to get yourself leveled up for. Of course, it's a lot easier now than it was when it was originally out. When I first did it and we were doing section numbers with 12, 13,000, I pretty much, I was grinding up restoration for quite a few days and used pretty much all the wound skin experience to restoration so I could get restoration to 70 so I could see what happens now. Or of course you could just fight them, because anyone can fight them. Of course you might not be able to win, but chances are, if you've managed to somehow get restoration to 70 plus, it's very likely that in all the stuff you did to get restoration that high, you'd have got your melee rating high enough to deal with them regularly anyway. Anyway, restoration used. Call upon your power of restoration. It succeeded! Woohoo! 250 experience, 56 experience to restoration. Your body trembles as the healing power of your magical discipline of restoration is projected onto the two brothers. Both men stagger as the powerful wave of Neville energy washes over them. After just a few moments, they gasp, cry out in agony, before dropping to their knees and collapsing face first onto the cave floor. What is to do that your attempt to heal them has caused them harm? You rush over to them, desperately seeking any sign of life from the two brothers. You are elated when in unison, both of the men subtly sit up. The lurid yellow glow that has vanished from their eyes, for the brothers still seem somewhat dazed. Over. At last. Over, croaks one of them, his weak voice tinged with amazement. In a few minutes, the men have recovered enough to regain their feet. And when they do, both of them step forward and in turn meet you with shoulder crosses. Tears run from the eyes of the larger of the two men. While the other, who introduces himself as Suiskur, thanks you repeatedly on behalf of himself and his brother. 10 long years has this curse run through our blood, he tells you. There is no end to the misery wrought while under its spell, and no end to the nightmares that will forever plague us. You have cured the disease, my friend, but what is done cannot be undone. We might only hope to be able to set right that which we are able, as best we can. You learn that the two brothers, once promising knights in the service of Queen Chevron of Phlegethon, were on the hunt for the beast that was terrorizing towns and villages in the eastern part of the kingdom when the fateful encounter occurred. A wolf creature, as black as shadows and as large as a troll, says Murin Greer, his voice trembling as he recalls the encounter. It came upon us in the ruins of the village it had razed, and through it we had 10 men at our backs who were no match for his might or his fury. When all went black, we assumed we had been slain, and the noble fight was at last over. The sight returned, and we found that we yet lived. But oh, have we since prayed for death? The brothers tell you that the affliction prevented them from harming themselves, but that it drove them to savage ends. With the curse of a ravenous appetite that was only sated by the devouring of human flesh. When you introduce yourself to the brothers and tell them that about Mjolnir and how he's been commissioned by Queen Chevron to bring them to justice. We will do what we must, what we can. For what time and with what direction the Allfather seems fit to provide us. You may take us to this Mjolnir, if we are be made to answer for that which the curse drove us to. So be it. With that, the three of you make your way out of the treacherous cave and across the moor towards Crow Hill. Mjolnir seems both shocked and angry when he returns to the summit of the Crow Hill with the two brothers, Suiskur and Mjolnir, walking freely behind you. When you explain to him what transpired in the cave and relate to him the brother's story, his demeanour softens and he apologises for his initial reaction. The Silverhead Sorceress tells you he was not aware of their history, and he wonders why the Queen, if indeed she knows of it, would conceal it from him. Then we shall return to Phaedon, and see what fate justice bequeaths to you, he says. Icarus, allow these men to settle on his back. We will leave at once. The silver-haired maid turns to you and thanks you for apprehending the brothers. I have no doubt their story will be met with pity, perhaps even forgiveness, he says, keeping his voice low. Though I cannot promise a joyous end to this affair, Sir Croakington. Long is their list of crimes. Longer and longer than that are the memories of the dear one, of those whose dear ones perished in ways both savage and unnatural by their hands. May the Queen and the Allfather look upon them with mercy. 1,024 experience to General. Fairly nice. As promised, Mjolnir hands to you a pouch containing the adventure tokens, and again thanks you for your help. 16 adventure tokens. Very nice. I have a feeling our paths may again cross someday. I really do hope so. Although, admittedly, if you turned up, then things are bad. Although, hopefully, I go into your place and help deal with some problems already there, he says, as he climbs up and settles himself upon a deep nook on Icarus's jagged spine. Watch the skies, Sir Croakington, and may you have health and happiness. You bid Mjolnir and Icarus farewell, and soon after, the mighty undead dragon lifts off from the summit of Crow Hill and climbs high into the sky until he's no more than a grey speck against the vast blue canvas. You watch as the dragon circles once and then turns west and soars out of sight. Without delay, you cautiously make your way back down Crow Hill and prepare to set off for Twindmoor. And now I'm in Twindmoor. I'm going to save here. And so, we're now ready. This is pretty much the end of this episode. And the next episode, well, nothing new has been unlocked by doing that. If we meet Mjolnir again, it's not now. And of course, as I said before, I really do hope we do, because he's so freaking cool. He's just so cool. You got a cape and dragon and really long hair. And he dresses in black. It's so cool, so cool. So, what to do? Well, thing is, I've already done with the secrets in Twythic, but just forgot to save afterwards. And I'm going to leave a wayward payment to the side, because that's some ethically dubious stuff. The same for a grim proposal. Yeah, so I've got three ethically. Four of the adventures here are involved doing ethically dubious things. A grim proposal. Three words. That involves some possible ethical dubiousness, although you can just not do it. Whispers that involves being told how to steal a Crickstone, and I'm not dealing with that. Especially from Wogabaddens, because he's a tough guy. And, you know, he's earned his Crickstone for all the adventures he did. And a wayward payment, that's just some regular crime stuff. Which can get a bit murdery. Yes, yeah, I think I'll generally sit out those four adventures. I might do three words, though. But anyway, a regular adventure is leaving Stone Gap. Maybe I'll do that next. Yeah, that'll be what I'll do next. But anyway, until then, farewell, fellow adventurers.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.